أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله الذي لا يبلغ مدحته القائلون ولا يحصي نعماءه العادون ولا يؤدي حقه المجتحدون الذي لا يدركه بعد الحمام ولا يناله غوص الفطن. ثم الصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين حبيب قلوبنا وطبيب نفوسنا والشفيع ذنوبنا سيدنا ومولانا أبي القاسم محمد. وعلى بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين المظلومين لا سيما بقية الله في الأرضين صاحب العصر والزمان خليفة الرحمن إمام الإنس والجان ولعن الله وعداهم أجمعين إلى يوم الدين. أما بعد، فقد قال الله وقوله الحق. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. ولقد كرمنا بني آدم وحملناهم في البر والبحر ورزقناهم من الطيبات وفضلناهم على كثير ممن خلقنا تفضيلا. صلوا على محمد وعلى محمد. The rise and decline of man has been our ongoing topic. Tonight is lecture number 8. Our attempt, our journey that we have done together now for a week has been all about this insan, this ajib khilqat of Allah that requires constant study and constant analysis. And sometimes we understand the insan through other insans, and sometimes we understand insan through ourselves. But the idea is that it seems as if we constantly discover or rediscover new dimensions of our own existence. That's why the ulama of akhlaq have said one of the most azim and the most important ulum that we have in Islam is ilm al-nafs, to understand yourself. Now that is a little bit of a spin-off of this topic. And if I had more time, of course, we'd talk about that topic, but that's not my topic. We have been, as you know, talking a little bit about the idea of where the insan, where man came from, the greatness by which he was created, the hadaf and purpose by which he was created, and how he got to a stage where, of course, the halat or the state of man is in front of you today. Now we have talked about many, many things. And the dua and the hope is that I first of all, act on what has been discussed, inshallah. And we use that as a wasila, as a tool, to ready ourselves for Imam al-Zamana, ajjalallahu ta'ala farajahu sharif. Somebody had mentioned to me last night, and I really appreciate the feedback, that why aren't you talking about Imam al-Zamana? And he's right, almost every single topic should be about the Imam. But when you discuss avenues to identify yourself, better yourself and elevate yourself, all of that is tied into, of course, Imam Zamana. Our intention, our niyyah, our hope is to ready ourselves such that when the Imam comes, he sees us worthy of his mission. So every discussion has a hint and a covering of our Imam. It's not like any Islamic discussion in this day and age is separate from the Imam. Everything is within that discussion of our 12th Imam. We have now for the past 4 nights talked a little bit about those elements that added to our decline. And yesterday we began this subtopic of those elements that will allow us and help us to make that rise back up to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Keep in mind the verse that we have been constantly reciting in the khutbah from Surah Isra, ayat number 70. And also keep in mind the verse I mentioned in passing a few nights ago of Inna lillahi wa inna ilayhi raji'un. We are from Allah, we return back to Allah. The rise is from Allah, the rise back is also to Allah. And so that's the purpose. Now last night we talked a little bit and we began to get the feet wet about the rise back to Allah. And we said it's not possible to reach back to Allah without studying and implementing His words. his kalam. And so yesterday's discussion on the Quran, of course, is in front of you. We talked about the idea of implementing that Quran, studying it, allowing it, and giving it its due rights. And I actually left some homework with all of you, that inshallah from tonight or from tomorrow, you begin at least 10 verses a day. If not by yourselves, then perhaps with the family as well. I won't ask you if you did your homework or not, don't worry about that, inshallah, that's up to that's between you and Allah. And continuing this discussion about the rise back to Allah, we have two discussions left in this topic. And they are very crucial discussions. You know that I structure the ashra around the fact, and the example I often give is that of an airplane that is about to take off. It's at the gate, it backs up, it taxis, it lifts off, it reaches elevation, and then it kind of cruises. And that's how the structure of the ashra has been. In the beginning we were taxiing, and now we've reached our elevation. And this is the peak of the ashra now. Today and tomorrow are the most crucial discussions of this entire 10 nights. And we had to do some muqaddimat, some preliminary discussions to get to this point. And so inshallah you are with me, your hearts are with me, your minds are with me. It's the weekend of Ashura, nothing else should matter but the dhikr of Ali Muhammad inshallah. And now of course you are here and you have the intention and niyat of course of bettering yourself as well. Sallu ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. The discussion tonight will revolve around the philosophy of shuja'at in Islam, courage in Islam, Islamic courage. I will try to define courage accordingly. We'll look at various examples from the Ahlul Bayt's life. And then of course, as we always do, bring it back to today's world and today's society. Our fourth Imam, Imam Zainul Abidin, alayhi salatu wasalam. He has left us some beautiful treasures. He's one of the Imams that had the fursat and the opportunity to do that. Whether it's in the form of the 54 du'as of Sahifa Sajadiyah, or the form of those whispered prayers of 15, or the form of his khutbah in the courtyard of Yazid. These are gems, they're jewels. And if studied and if applied, they can change our lives. Very briefly, touching upon that very famous khutbah and sermon that he gave when he reached the courtyard of Yazid, and I always encourage my youth, especially my elders, everybody, to have a look at that sermon. Now they've made YouTube videos about it. And the way that he and Bibi Zainab's khutbah complemented each other is incredible. She had one mission, he had one mission. It's almost as if they worked together to say, look, you discuss this, I'll discuss this. And the encompassing picture of the entire movement of Imam Hussein was well represented by these two khutbahs. Mashallah. Imam Sajjad begins, and his sole purpose of that khutbah was not to talk about Yazid, but to introduce the Ahlul Bayt to those who were in that courtyard who had no idea who the Ahlul Bayt were. You know, you know enough to know about history, that the history of Sham is such that when it was controlled and conquered by Muawiyah, his father, it was a majority Roman Catholic area. When they converted to Islam, the Shamis, they converted to Islam through Muawiyah. You can imagine what kind of deen they have if their teacher is Muawiyah. His sole purpose was propaganda and mind control. The first thing that he did was that he debunked this idea of the Ahlul Bayt. Because everywhere you turn during then, every hadith, every ayat, everything that talks about the fadilat of Ali Muhammad was there in front of him, spreading like wildfire. He got control of the Shamis and said, look, all this talk about the family of the Prophet, it's nothing. If there's any family of the Prophet, it's us. It's our Hanan, our tribe. And so any sort of exposure to Islam, to those who are in Sham, was through Muawiyah. Now it makes sense sometimes we hear about the fact that when Bibi Zainab and this Qafla entered that bazaar in Sham, they were throwing stones at her. They were using obscene language. And oftentimes we ask, did they not know who she was? No, they had no idea who she was. These were introduced as rebels. People who just wanted to do what? To revolt and protest against the Khalifa of their time. And they were told that if anyone does that, they deserve this treatment. So now along comes Imam Sajjad, a shackled, broken, sick man, in front of the Khalifa of the time, in a darbar, in a courtyard filled with 700 people, the books say. Yazid knew who he was, who his father was, who his grandfather was. But the majority of the Shamis who were around there at that time had no idea who Imam Sajjad was or his lineage. So now when Imam Sajjad is asking Yazid, because you know this is at a moment where the head of Imam Hussein is brought to Yazid, and very, you know, all of you know that the way he treated Imam Hussein's head was with the utmost disrespect, taunting it, hitting it. At that moment, Imam Sajjad asked Yazid, can I say a few words? And initially, the request was denied by Yazid, because he knew full well the khitabat of Ali Muhammad is amazing. And then the people of that darbar and courtyard said to Yazid, look at him. He's a shackled prisoner. His feet are chained, his hands are chained, his neck is tied up, he's sick, he's been through this very difficult journey. What could he possibly say to affect right now this victory parade of yours? Let the man speak. And so he spoke. And he gave this very famous khutbah. And if I had time, the entire majlis, it deserves an entire ashra to dissect this khutbah. What is relevant to our topic of shuja'at today is the opening few lines of this khutbah. Where he says, for those who don't know who we are, this is who we are. And he says that we, the Ahlul Bayt, are known by six qualities. Now what is interesting here to note is that, you know, a few nights ago we talked about and we gave a hadith by Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq alayhi salatu wasalam. Of the idea of Nahnu Asma'ul Husna. We are the manifestation of those grand, beautiful names of Allah. So the idea that Imam Sajjad chose only six of a possible many, many more qualities to introduce themselves to the masses was very interesting. Why these six? That's a different discussion altogether. But then he said, Ahlul Bayt are known by six. Ilm and Hilm. Knowledge and forbearance. Sakhawat and balagat, generosity and eloquence in our speech. Mahabbat fi qulub al-mu'minin, in the hearts of the mu'minin you'll find love for us. And then he says, shuja'at. We are courageous individuals. Now sometimes, you know, we hear about courage, we have this image in our mind of physical bravery, physical courage. A guy who's ripped, a guy who's big, a guy who can take down some guys, maybe an octagon UFC fighter, right? Somebody who can knock another guy out. And so we equate bravery and courage to physical brute strength. And that physical strength, and the stronger you are physically, the more brave and courageous you are. Such that if I was walking down a dark alley, I would want this guy beside me. And while an element of that is accurate in terms of physical strength, no doubt, a better meaning that's more relevant to our discussion today has nothing to do with brute strength. The idea of shuja'at, who is a shaji in Islam, a true courageous one in Islam, is the one that when he is faced with a crossroads between what him and his nafs wants and what Allah wants, the courageous one is the one who denies what he wants and travels the path of what Allah wants. The deen wants A, you want B. You're not just screaming for B, the deen is commanding you for A. The courageous one is the one who chooses A over B. Let's give a few examples to bring the point home. Sallu ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. We don't have a better example in our history, in our aqidah, than that of our first imam. In any aspect that you want to pick up. His worship, his intelligence, his sacrifice, his service, anything. any favilat, any quality that you want to adopt inside of your life, the mirror of that that you want to tread is Mawla Ali. Many, many times in history, many of the grand ulama and maraji, sometimes we believe that these maraji are against the fadal of the Ahlul Bayt. God forbid. There's been many times where I have sat in durus, where before the actual kitab is opened, the book is opened, the alim in the class will sit there and tell me about the fadilat of saying Ya Ali Madad before anything that you do. Calling Ali for help, calling Ali for Madad, all these things. This is a source of our pride. This is what we need to identify with. Now saying that, at the same time there are those things that Imam Ali has done that's very difficult for us to do. If we examine his life during the prophethood of Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam. I'm sorry, if I can please ask you guys to move a little bit this way. The hall again is tilting towards my left. If you can please, if you don't mind, just move a little bit this way. There's lots of green carpet over here, please. A little bit away from the door. That way those who walk in are not bothered, please, if you don't mind. Now when we talk about the bravery of Imam Ali, for sure our mind goes towards Badr, Ahad, Khandaq Khaybar, Siffin, Nehravan. Stories that we've heard since we were a child. Stories that warms our hearts. Gives us goosebumps almost. We love hearing about that fadaya. We want to hear about his wulfiqar. Even when we try to, you know, draw and depict Imam Ali, there has to be a Zulfiqar in there somewhere. Because that's what the epitome to us of Imam Ali's bravery is. And there's no doubt about that. This man was a warrior beyond anybody else. But at the same time, there's an element of his courage that sometimes goes unnoticed that we really need to examine and attempt to adopt. His ability to be able to read what the deen wants for me at that moment. And then, of course, to do that, even though he knows full well that if I pulled out my Zulfiqar, this would be over. To me, is incredible. During the time of the Holy Prophet, every single war of the Holy Prophet, with every single war, and some historians say that Ali was part of every war except for one, Tabuk. Otherwise, he was front and center. Okay, 35 in Badr, for example. Amr ibn Abdawal, let's say in Khandaq, the Dawr of Khaybar, for example. All these things are in front of us. But Tabuk was the only one where he wasn't there, and those are for reasons that I don't have time to discuss. Meaning his Zulfiqar was very busy during the 23 years of the Holy Prophet's prophethood. But after the demise of the Holy Prophet, until he became this Khalifa al-Zahiri of 4.5 years, the Zulfiqar never came out. But once he became Khalifa and the Ummah begged him to become the Khalifa al-Waqf, again the Zulfiqar came out during 3 civil wars. Right? Siffin, Jamal, Nahrawan. Now some talk about and rave about, like I said, the bravery and the way he used to maneuver that Zulfiqar. But other historians have said that perhaps the most courageous that we've ever seen Ali is during the 23 years of the 3 Khulafa. The 23 years of the Khulafa. This quote-unquote silence that all of you have been hearing since you were a child. This khamoshi of Amir al-Mu'mineen. And I wish I had more time, but he wasn't silent. He wasn't silent. He was very vocal. Him and Sayyidah Fatima were very vocal to ensure that they were reminded that 70 days ago you were in Ghadir. You placed your hand in my hand. Bakhin, bakhin, you gave me bayat. But after a while, of course, all that was forgotten. Now I want you to imagine, you know, sometimes we think that Imam Ali doesn't have the same beating heart that you and I have. Sometimes we believe that Imam Ali doesn't feel the pain that you and I feel. Because it seems as if history writes that he would do things that were so difficult for us with such ease that maybe he was almost able to turn a switch off. That for us, that switch never turns off. The same for Imam Hussein. We hear about this musibah. We hear about him carrying body after body, right? Almost as if, God forbid, it's robotic for him. Until you hear a few of his speeches, and you hear about the fact that he was shedding tears. And then we remind ourselves, oh yes, there's a human element to these Ahlul Bayt. If you pick up Khutbah Shaqiyya and Nahjul Balagha, you'll feel the pain of Amirul Mu'mineen. The words this man writes gives you some idea of what he felt. First of all, his guide, his mentor, his wali, his father figure, Rasulullah, is gone from this world. Saqifa is happening, there's complete turmoil and chaos inside the Muslim Ummah. It's very, very tense during those days. Emotions are very high. People are worried about saying the wrong thing. People are worried about rocking the boat. People don't know which camp who's in. And all these things are happening. And in that time, in that era now, he's watching somebody else take his God-given right from him. And if you've done any work on this khutbah, you know that he compares that to a shirt. To a shirt. And says that this individual wore a shirt, and I'm paraphrasing, wore a shirt that wasn't meant for him. Wasn't his size. He forced it, he somehow made a button and said, look, I'm wearing a shirt. It's obvious that that shirt's not for you. If I come and bring one of my shirts and give it to Murad uncle, it'll be a one-piece jubba on him, for sure. And you say, Murad, ya aapka kameez nahi, ya kahan se leka, it's not your shirt. Mawla Ali, the first thing he says, this man has taken this shirt and he has forced it upon himself. And now in front of you, now of course, this Khalifa Wat is standing in front of you looking and wearing something that obviously doesn't belong to him. And the Ummah is quiet except for a handful. He says, the old died off, the young became old. I was waiting for my God-given right to be given back to me. And I waited, and I waited, and I waited. And he says, if I'm to pull out the Zulfiqar, then people say Ali is greedy for power. If I remain quiet, they say Ali is fearful of death. Where does the man go? Look at the pain of our Mawla. And on top of that, he's being approached by the likes of Abu Sufyan. Ali, this Khilafah is not theirs. It belongs to you and the Bani Hashim. You know it, they know it, I know it. And now he says, you just say the word, I have me and my army ready, I'll get that Khilafah back for you. This is fresh now. Imam Ali's feelings and emotions are very real. It's tense in Medina at that moment. The Prophet was just buried, Saqifa just happened. People are going, giving bayah to the first Khalifa. Along comes this man, it doesn't matter who it is. And for a moment, you have this door opening where now you could be given back what your God-given right is. But nowhere do we think for a moment that, of course, he even contemplated the idea. He will look at Abu Sufyan and say, this whole mess is because of the likes of you. Meaning he wasn't somebody who gave in to his emotion. His aqal was still hakim over his emotion. We talked about the fact a few nights ago, remember? And these are all collected discussions. A true insan in every state is that yes, even though when your emotions are high, your lust is high, your shahwa is high, the aql does not stop governing over that shahwa. Imam Ali is standing there. He is a wreck, if it's okay if I use that word. An emotional mess, in pain, angry, an array of emotions. Along comes this man and says, give me 1 minute. One day, I'll have everything fixed for you. You and your Bani Hashim can enjoy this khilaf. Someone like me at least would think about it. I'll get back to you, Abu Sufyan. Give me till tomorrow. Let me sleep on it. No way did we have that there was a delay in the response. He asked for mohalat. No. Immediately he says, you know what, please. You of all people, go away from here. My desire is not that much, but I want it from you. But yet there he stood, watching one khalifa, two khalifas, three khalifas come. And he, of course, stood there. Why? Because the deen is asking him, Ali, be patient. Ali, be patient. This is not the time for the Zulfiqar right now. Many of you ask why. This man, if he pulled, just pull it out, these guys would run. He didn't do that. Now let me give you one example as to why. I know this might be obvious to many of you. It's a good reminder. Why didn't he pull Zulfiqar out at that moment? And why is it that Imam Hussein pulled it out during Yazid's time? It's a discussion. The very famous case, all of you have heard, memorized. The two mothers with one child comes to Imam Ali, correct? Okay, keep that in the back of your mind. What is the case very quickly? One claims this is my child, one claims this is my child. Imam Ali in his wisdom says what? Let's cut the baby in half, you get one half, you get another. One mother says that, no, Mawla, it's her child. Give the child to her. And of course, the hukam was, the judgment was, that in fact it's not hers, it's in fact your baby. A true mother, a true guardian, a true protector, would rather see it alive, well, in one piece, albeit in the hands of somebody else, than cut into pieces. Come to Imam Ali now. Understand, please. Islam is only 23 years old. In its infancy, Jawan, very, very volatile. Rome is waiting for the Prophet to die. Iran is waiting for the Prophet to die. The Quraysh are waiting for the Prophet to die. When all avenues of trying to destroy Muhammad's message was gone, their last resort was when the man dies, the deen will die with it. And they waited. It's in its infancy now. Now if Imam Ali was to pull out that sword the day after Rasulullah had left this world and started a civil war, this baby of Islam would have been in pieces. And the same hukam would apply to him. As the guardian, as the protector, as the wali of the deen, it's better that the deen is in one piece, albeit with somebody else, than chopped into pieces and destroyed. The sacrifice, and let me say, the courage of Amir al-Mu'mineen during those 23 years is absolutely incredible. And that might... Sallu ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. And again, I'll make this point. Time and time again, tonight, I'll repeat it a few times. The path is that your khaish, your shahwa, your desire, your nafs, screaming at you, calling at you. On one path, the deen of Islam calls you as well. And what Imam Ali did was, he ignored. He wasn't robotic, right? I believe, and from history reading, that there was an element that he felt pain. That this khilafat, not because of he wanted power and money, God forbid, of course not. The fact that that responsibility was given to him and taken away from him. He was worried about the deen of Islam itself, not about his own thing. He chose the path of Allah. And he sat there. And he sat there and he did everything he could. He was supportive towards the deen. Many people think that he supported the khulafa. I'm sorry. He was very vocal against them. And I don't say this to disunite the ummah at all. This is history. Unity of the ummah does not mean that you erase the pages of history. History is history. I can't throw the books out. But we don't use it to create a split. We bayan history, we move on. Imam Ali was so supportive of the khulafa, the very famous statement of Lawla Aliyun lihalaka al-Umar is there in front of you. Not once, this man said it 70 times in his khilafat. 70 times, if Ali wasn't there, I would have been halak, finished. Sometimes the Jews are coming, challenging the Khalifa of Waqt. They have no answer sometimes, go to the door of Ali. Sometimes the Shias are confused, go to Ali. Sometimes the atheists come, who is Allah, go to Ali. Sometimes there is an attack from this side, Ali come and defend them. I mean, fine, he wasn't the Khalifa, and Zulfiqar didn't come out. But he was able to do what? To serve the deen, knowing full well that, look, I need to give this deen tarbiyat, even though it's in the hands of somebody else. And that requires courage. To choose the path of Allah over the path of your desires is the epitome of courage in Islam. That's point number one. Inshallah, that is very clear to all of you. Now, how does that relate to us today? Let me give you another example. From the son of Amir al-Mu'mineen, the very Messiah that we recite tonight, of this glorious, loyal man, while there is a side of him that is full of musibah, there's a side in him that's full of fada'il as well. Incredible. His story is, and all of you, mashallah, know the story better than I do. You know enough to know that when Imam Ali was looking to have a son for his Hussein on the day of Ashura, he summoned his brother to find that tribe that's known for their what? For their courage, for their wafadari, for their strength, for their bravery. He marries Umm al-Banin. From Umm al-Banin comes, of course, Abul Fazl al-Abbas. On the day of Ashura, 34 years old, some reports say. 34 years old is the height of his jawani. And they say this man was a monster of a man. Monster of a man. Some say, now I haven't read this myself, but some say, he used to sit on the horse and his feet would drag in the sand. If you've been to Karbala, you've been to the dhari of Abul Fazl Abbas, it's massive. It's a massive dhari. Now I want you to picture again, I'm trying to tap into the human element of these personalities that we believe sometimes are so godly, are so pious, that they have stripped themselves of any human element. No. Abul Fazl Abbas is sitting there on the day of Ashura, watching his beloved nieces die of thirst in front of him. I'm not a masajid, obviously. Watching his mullah, bit by bit, his lips are getting drier and drier by the second. The desert heat. He knows for a moment that I can finish this in one stroke. You can't touch me, I'm Abbas. I have that blood of Haidar inside of me. Just the idea when he enters the Maidan of Karbala, we say in Masaib, what? It was like a sea party, the enemies would run. He's watching all this, he knows. Just give me that moment of permission. Give me 1 second. And I will give you water, I'll give you water, we'll end all this misery. Until he is told by Imam Hussein that Abbas, we're not here for that. We're here for a different mission. Put your sword away and follow my command. And they say sometimes, the Urdu ulama say very nicely, that Abbas was that man who turned what? His josh into hosh on that very day of Ashura. He took that emotion, he took that desire, that pain that he had to rescue Imam Hussein from his pain. And he knows that, you know what, if I take things in my own hands, that will be a problem. So he was very patient. The only time that he was given permission was for what? Was for water. And we know the history. But look at the ability that this man now has, this Jalal inside of him. The Jalal of Haidar inside of him. He also has the complete confidence that these guys on that side can't touch me. It's a very difficult thing, it's very hard to swallow that. Put your sword away and follow the Imam of your time. What the deen is saying, to follow that. Even though you believe inside of you that I can end this in a moment. To swallow that and accept this requires, the word is what? Courage. Requires complete shuja'at. And today, in this day and age, my youth, every single one of us, are constantly at that crossroads. Our nafs is screaming at us, the deen of Islam is screaming at us as well. The nafs is pulling at us, Islam is pulling at us. And what's easy, with all due respect to all of you and me as well, what's easy is to listen to the nafs. That path less traveled is the one where we deny the nafs and we accept the path of Islam. That courage, that shuja'at is what's needed today in all of us as well. Sallu ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. It's vital, I tell you, it's vital. And with all due respect, it's easy. You know, Milana, we're in the West. We assimilate, our names change, our look changes. You know, they tell me that, oh, you're from the Hausa, you don't know how corporate America is. You're right. I've spent time in corporate Canada before my house of life. And you'll tell me it's very hard. And I absolutely accept. If one thing I know and one thing that you can expect from me is empathy for all of you. The fights you're fighting on the ground, my youth and my young, especially those who are professionals in the field. You're out there 9 to 5, like I said. And you're out there, let's say for example, you're out there struggling for a job. You haven't had a job in months. Resume after resume after resume, nothing, no hits, nothing, no movement. No prospects, all of a sudden now a company you've been waiting for you to call back, calls back and says, you know what, we want to see you. Alhamdulillah, you're excited, you're prepared for the interview, put on your best suit, you go, you enter, in front of you the interviewee is a female. وَلَا حَوْلَ وَلَا قُوَّةَ. How are you, Mr. Naqvi? Nice to meet you. Crossroads. You think for a moment, if I don't shake her hand, she may not hire me. Some companies, I've been told, and they're accurate, sometimes it's that handshake initially, where they say yes or no. A firm handshake. Now you're going to sit there and be the awkward bending and saying, I'm sorry, I don't touch women. And you think, you know what, I can't do it. I've been waiting months for this interview. So it's okay, maybe I'll just shake her hand and say, Allah, I'm sorry, I had to. In the process, what you've done now, and I'm not saying it's easy. I've been in ample situations myself, you know, where people extend. I've said, it's one example I'm saying. Now what you've done, you've announced to yourself, I believe, for that split second, the 1 second of a handshake, you've told yourself that my risk, my bi-weekly check is in her hands. And you've removed the raziq from the equation. And you've said, so long as I please her and displease him, I'll have a bi-weekly check. When actually the opposite is there. We have to have enough courage to know that yes, maybe she won't hire me, but, and that there has to be an element of reliance here on Allah. But I can tell Allah, if she didn't hire me because I didn't shake her hand, then I did that to protect your deen and your sharia. I expect you, and you can use those words, I expect you, that if this opportunity was gone because I followed your sharia, then you will open doors for me that I thought never existed. The Quran says what? وَمَنْ يَتَّقِ لَا يَجْعَلْ لَهُ مَخْرَجًا وَيَرْذُقُهُ مِنْ حَيْثُ لَا يَحْتَسِبُ. The one who has taqwa and piety, Allah will create for them a makhraja, an outlet, an exit. And then he says, he will give you risk from a source that you never even accounted for. You never thought there's a door here. From that very wall, the door opens and you walk right through. But that only happens when what? You have the courage to say, look, with all due respect, thank you very much. Can we proceed with the interview? You chose Allah over this path. And by doing so, you're telling Allah, look, I hope you're watching me right now. That was a very difficult thing I just did. And if I don't get the job because of it, I expect you to open the door where I don't see a door in front of me. Countless examples of that, but that requires courage. That requires courage. What's easy, shake hands, say sorry later. It's like that moment where, of course, you're outside, right? You're out and your destiny will be home by midnight. Your curfew is midnight. It's 12:30, 1 a.m. You're out anyways. You're out. You're late as an hour anyways. If you're late 1 hour or 3 hours, who cares? Now, of course, you're out. Let's enjoy 2 more hours. Get the beats tomorrow and move on. Inshallah, no worries. But I got 2 more hours out of it. I'll make this mistake and then ask Allah, astaghfirullah, rabbi wa atubu alayh. And inshallah, He'll forgive you. He really will forgive you. But the message you're sending yourself, when you choose the path that's less traveled, when you choose the path that's less traveled, you're making an announcement to your soul and your nafs that as azeem as you are, as much as you want this and this and this, I've identified by saying La ilaha illallah, I've identified there's an entity, a power, a force higher than what you want from me. And I've submitted to that power. Now if that power wants what you want, alhamdulillah. If not, then I will every single time choose to please that power over your lowly nafs voice. That's the announcement. When that doesn't happen, we become apologetic Muslims. And that's one of the key problems we have today. For some reason, we're embarrassed of our deen. We're embarrassed of it. And we're apologetic. And so we'll keep a beard, but the smallest trim on level one, just enough that you can, with the magnifying glass, it's there. Under this chandelier, I might see it, inshallah. Why? If it gets a little bit tough, then people, oh, ISIS, Baba, it's not like that, man. Please. Have a little bit of pride in your deen. Know that how much effort has gone, how much blood has been shed for your sharia to be with you today. Have pride in that. Introduce, tell them that, look, I know what's happening right now in this West. I know exactly the forces against us. But I am a proud Shia Muslim. And at the workplace, it's time for Salat, I will pray Salat. I'm not going to make the entire bathroom drenched in my wudu, I promise you. Nor am I going to wear my suit pants up to my shins, I promise you. But I will pray Salat when I have to. A quick full rakat, and I'm back at work. And on top of that, my deen also teaches me to be the best employee possible at my company. To be on time, to be trustworthy, to meet my demands, to be cordial. When you see, wow, this man has religion. He has a nice beard, he prays on time, and he's employee of the month, mashallah. That is the best message you can send. As opposed to, oh, what's happening in Iraq or ISIS or Daesh? Oh, I don't know, I'm not really one of those extreme Muslims. One thing we have to embrace now is that whether you like it, whether we like it or not, we are ambassadors of the deen today, I'm sorry. You can't hide anymore. You can't hide anymore. They'll pick up by your name, they'll pick up by your beard, they'll pick up by your accent. Oh, you're Muslim? Oh, you're a Shiite? Okay, come here, I have a few questions for you. This. If you say, oh, I don't know, you are painting a bad picture for the deen. We need courage today to follow the Sharia of Islam. Follow it with knowledge and follow it with pride, inshallah. Sallu ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. Don't tell me about taqiyya, don't tell me about days of hiding, don't tell me about, you know, green card and risk and all that. All those days are gone. You are here, nobody can, even Trump can't do anything to you. He really can't. Before he can, he'll be impeached, inshallah. Don't worry about it. Okay? It is vital that we develop this Islamic courage inside of us. Because the other idea, the other way is that if we begin to go a little bit scared, apologetic, then of course the disease of doubt comes about. And doubt we talked about a few nights ago. But a little bit more dangerous than that, and I'll use an ayat of the Quran for, as a sahara for my point, to get this point across. Inshallah, all of you with me, inshallah? Sallu ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. Sometimes the Quran gives us examples on how to be. It's a book of guidance, right? Hudal lil muttaqin. We talked about that yesterday. It's a book of guidance. And through that guidance, sometimes there's 200 plus stories in the Quran of various groups, various tribes, various prophets. And sometimes those stories are all about what to do and how to worship Allah. Like Ashabi Kahf, for example. Then there are those where there is a tribe, let's say, for example, that you don't want to be like. Surah Tahrim, for example, talks about the wives of the prophets. It mentions those wives of certain prophets that you shouldn't be like. And then in that very same surah, talks about Bibi Asiya, the wife of Fir'aun, for example. Right? ضَلَبَ اللَّهُ مَثَلٍ لَّذِينَ آمَنَ أَمْرَأَةَ فِرْعَوْنَ. For those who have iman, we've used the example of Asiya, the wife of Fir'aun. Then there are moments when the Quran talks about groups, how you should be, how you shouldn't be. The verse that I'm about to read for all of you is a warning from Allah, from the Quran, of how not to be. وَلَا تَكُونُوا كَالَّذِينَ نَسُوا اللَّهَ فَأَنْسَاهُمْ أَنفُسَهُمْ أُولَٰئِكَ هُمُ الْفَاسِقُونَ. Do not be like those who have forgotten Allah to the point where He has made them forget about themselves. They are the fasiqun, the transgressors. It makes sense to someone like me that when he talks about forgetting Allah, sometimes we forget Allah. Sometimes when we are sinning, when we're out there, and of course, if Allah was present in our mind, we wouldn't make those mistakes. And at that time when we are committing sin, making mistakes, Allah is not in the picture. That makes sense. But the connection between forgetting Allah and forgetting ourselves, that doesn't quite make sense to me. What does it mean, the process to forget yourself? And let me give you an example. I'm not from here, you know that, I live in Toronto. I want you to imagine that somebody now in these first 10 years has invited me to their ghar ki majlis. They have a majlis inside their home. That, let's say on this date, at this time, there's a majlis. Okay, no problem. I have a car. I don't have any SIM card inside of my phone. I have no GPS. I have a car. That's all I have. I asked the host, can you send somebody to me so I can follow them, let's say, to your majlis. Or someone says, oh, Imran, if you're going there, I'll come to your place and you can follow me. And so long as you're behind me, I'll get you to your majlis. Follow the example, please. Now this man begins to drive and I begin to drive. We're good so far until we get on the 76. That's when he turns into this NASCAR driver all of a sudden. Zip, zoom, zip, zoom. I'm like, I'm trying to keep up with him. And what ends up happening is that I do what? I lose him. He's gone. I have no idea where I'm going. I have no idea what's going on. I don't have any GPS. I don't have data. I have nothing. Now, he had mentioned to me, the host of the majlis, that I live in this area. He mentioned that. So I decided to, you know, kind of make my way in that area. Mentioned a couple of street names, for example. I have that memorized. So I got myself to his neighborhood. Now I'm inside gully looking for some signs of a house majlis. And there are signs that we have for house majlises. One sure sign are the smokers outside of the on the front lawn. Okay? And they're having this intense talk about cricket for some reason every time they smoke. Another sign is that you have this, the garage doors open, and mashallah, there's a big, big pot of haleem being, and one guy is just stirring his haleem, mashallah, and the ash from the cigarettes falling inside the haleem. It's like, it's okay, chalega yaar, and you're just doing what you're doing. So I'm looking for all these things. And then the last sign is that, of course, we are illegally parked up and down the street of the house majlis, blocking every driveway possible. I get to the house, and the host says, what happened? I said, I lost my guide. In the process, I was at the disposal of what I thought was right. So I made a left here where I could have made a right. I made a U-turn here because I made a wrong turn. And the margin of error, because my guide became a NASCAR driver, became higher. So long as I am with the guide, so long as I'm with the driver, there is no element of error. He turns left, I turn left. He goes right, I go right. And with any issues at all, we will arrive, inshallah, at the majlis. But if that guide is gone, if that guiding factor and force is not in my life, then I am completely at the whim of what I think is right. What I think is right. So I think I should make a right here. I think I should make a left here. It feels like this is the right area. He talked about a UPS store. He talked about a Wawa station. These are all what I'm looking for signals now. So all but the element and the margin of error increases bit by bit by bit. I've made plenty of U-turns. I finally get to his house 45 minutes late. But I get there with a lot of error. When we lose Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, we are at the whim of our own khayal, our own thoughts. Please follow me for a moment. And so long as we are following Allah and His commands and His divine scripture, the margin of error in our life is almost zero. He's promised guidance to those who wish guidance. But the moment that we forsake Allah, forget Allah, remove Allah, and we're on that 76 highway, everything now is at the whim of what I think is right. And one of the problems that we have today is this, I think I'm right. And the deen has become two. Deen khayali and deen kitabi. The deen inside of my khayal that I think the deen is this, and what the actual deen in the books are. And they challenge that very thing. They say, mere khayal mein jo hai ye sahi nahi hai, for example. I think this, if you ask me, this doesn't sit well with me. I don't believe this is right. It's written black and white. I can show you, this is a script right now. In plain English, in plain Urdu, in plain Farsi. No, no, this can't be right. Why? It doesn't sit with your deen khayal. A lot of my youth hear about these traditions about what? When the imam will come out of ghaybat, he'll introduce a new deen. And they're confused. Is it not the deen that we are following? It is the deen that we are following. His deen is that deen of Muhammadi. The deen that we have is the watered down version of the deen to the point where it becomes unrecognizable to the deen of Imam Zamana. I'll give you an example. Imam Hussein alayhi salatu wasalam. He has a beautiful way of describing the deen just before the arrival of the Mahdi. He uses a glass of water, a glass of water. This glass of water has water in it right now. Okay? He says, I want you to imagine the deen of Islam is a glass that is filled with water. Pure, khalis, beautiful, filtered water. Because bit by bit now, as the deen gets closer to the arrival of our son Mahdi, the water will be out. What will be left inside the glass are droplets of water. Where you could say that at one moment this glass had water in it, but the water is gone. That will be the state of the deen of Islam before the arrival of the Mahdi. That's dangerous. And that comes to the point where, why? Because we have no longer had the courage to believe in that deen that's been revealed to us. We resort to what I think is right. And so talk about this idea of changing the deen and modernizing the deen of the West, the deen of 2017, not the deen of the cave people or the mountaintop. The Quran was relevant back then, no longer is the Quran relevant today. Hijab was good back then, hijab doesn't work today. Khums is nothing but a money laundering system for the ulama, God forbid. There are people who come to me and say, Malana, I've made khums haram on myself. MashaAllah. I do taqleed, and these are all absolute true stories. I do taqleed of myself, Malana, he says. And all this stems from the idea of what? This deen-e khayal. I think. And we take that and we wrap it in everything. In everything. When it comes to azadari, we want to grieve for Imam Hussein and cry for Imam Hussein and hold our majalis for Imam Hussein the way we think it's right. Whether or not that has any effect on the deen whatsoever, it's irrelevant. I think I should do this. And I don't mean to insult anybody here, but with all due respect, our wisdom, our understanding is a drop in the ocean of Allah's understanding. Once you say La ilaha illallah, and you've identified Him to be the Ma'bud, with all due respect, submit completely. And that submission requires you to do what? Choose the path that's less traveled, the path of Allah, not the path of your khayal and your nafs and your desires. Sallu ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. I'm sorry, it's a tough pill to swallow. It's very, very sour. I'm sorry. It's not easy to say these things up here or to hear them those things where you're sitting. But we are living in a very difficult time right now. Our fifth imam says, if those Shias before the arrival of my son Mahdi knew the state of the deen and the state of mankind before the arrival of our son, they wouldn't pray for his arrival. How difficult it would be. When you've heard about these stories, the sixth imam says it's easier to hold a hot coal in your hand than to preserve your deen before the arrival of the Mahdi. All these things are in front of you. And so we need to really understand the deen. Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq, alayhi salatu wasalam. He says, if you enter the deen of Islam because of people, you'll exit the deen because of people. If you enter the deen of Islam because of the Quran and the Sunnah, he says mountains will move. You will never leave the deen whatsoever. So it's a matter of reviewing the entry into the deen. How did that entry happen? Is that entry still going on? Am I still entering the door or not? If I'm fully in, am I fully in or not? This idea of a buffet table type of deen. Well, I'll take this, I won't take this. I'll take this, I won't take this. The deen says no. The entire table is for you to eat. But eat from every single plate. Broccoli is important. Steak is important. Butter chicken is also very important. But this idea that yes, no, and you'll take those things that suit you. The deen says, no, I need a complete submissive Muslim. A young child in this room, for example, walks from this side, out the door, then inside the hall, then out the door, then inside the hall, then out the door. After about 10 times, Goliath uncle will grab him by the neck. There's always one in every community, right? That's Goliath uncle. And say, look, Bita, either you're in the majlis, or you're out of the majlis. The deen says the exact same thing. Either you're in the deen, or you're out of the deen. If you're in the deen, you're in the deen wholeheartedly. Those things that are sour for you to do, like give 20% of your hard-earned money, submit. Those things that are easy for you, Like Ghami Hussein is easy for us. We look forward to it. It's also deen. Then that's also there. The day of Eid is fine. The day we have to give and submit to our manja is also very difficult. These things are required today. When the dushman is really getting stronger and stronger day in and day out. And we need to really get our act together. And the problem is the fact that we haven't resorted back to the main sources of the deen. We learned the deen from Wikipedia. We learned the deen from WhatsApp groups. We learned the deen from memes online. We attach a hadith that looks like it's pretty cool and say Imam Ali, and then we send it out and it goes flying from that group to that group. I get the same meme 15 times from 15 different WhatsApp groups. No source, nothing. It doesn't even sound like Mullah's kalam. But it looks great. It's a nice picture of a rose. Let's send it. And that's my tabligh. Done. Let's move on. Let's be careful. Let's be very careful. What do we have to do in this day and age? Is trace ourselves back to the original sources of the deen. Learn from those asli mande, those real sources. The Ahlul Bayt, the Quran, and the aql of the insan. And all three of those things are being attacked day in and day out by the dushman. I'll give you a very simple example. Sallu ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. I want you to imagine, now somebody had traveled to Kashmir. You know, we used to have Kashmir students in the Hausa. Beautiful people, bright, energetic. I would talk to them. A few of them were good friends of mine. They would describe to me how Kashmir is. And say, Kashmir is Jannat on earth. I said, right? It's beautiful. Bahariye, and there's water everywhere. It's just beautiful. And a friend of mine went there, took a video. There's a couple of beautiful areas of Kashmir. And what's happening there is a real shame. He says he describes to me an area. He says there are mountains, and there are natural spring water streams that are coming from the mountaintop and going down the mountain into this area. And on both sides of that river, there's homes that are built. So you're living on the water, and this water is completely pure, clean. You can drink from the water straight. It's coming from that source. And I imagined that, and I thought, wow, that's beautiful. Now I want you to imagine this entire image of a neighborhood of people open the door and they see this beautiful stream of clean water in front of them. Some are sitting on the front porch, mashallah, in deep thought as the water runs by. Some are doing wudu, let's say, in that water. But I want you to imagine that you picture and you're sitting there and you're witnessing this entire beautiful picture, and you see one man open his front door, take his garbage can, and dump it inside the water. And you're shocked. You think, how could you do that? This is beautiful, clean water. The neighbor says, well, if he's doing that, I mean, and the garbage is building up and it's really smelling inside of my house, he walks out and dumps more garbage. Before you know it, the entire neighborhood is dumping garbage into this water. To the point where the water now changes from clean, khalis water to disgusting, garbage-filled water. It starts to smell, it starts to pollute. You can no longer drink from it, obviously. You can't even look at it. And what was once a beautiful, clean area is now a completely polluted area. And nobody but those who were part of that neighborhood came and polluted that very water. Now if you describe to somebody that, you know, this area at one moment, you know, you bring your friend and say, look, I want to show you this area that I used to come to. Now, you know, you would tell him that, look, you know, there came a time but this garbage wasn't here. This is completely beautiful, clean water. You could drink from it. You can do wudu from it. He won't believe you. This garbage, this landfill. And in there somehow, you're looking for drinking water. Somebody's searching for drinking water. Eventually, you'll convince yourself there's no drinking water there. If you want to get drinking water, what do? You trace the water back to its original source. And where that water is coming out of the mountaintop, you climb that mountain, you take your cup, and you get the beautiful water from its original source. The deen of Islam today is no different. It was given to us as beautiful, clean, khalis water. I'm not here to blame the Jews or blame the Zionists or blame the Christians or blame that group or this group. We have polluted our own very deen. We've taken ayat of the Quran, we've wrongly done tafsir, and we actually believe that killing innocent lives is allowed in Islam. We've convinced ourselves that doing this is allowed in Islam. In the process, what we're doing is, with every wrong translation, every wrong understanding, we're dumping our garbage, our thoughts, our khayal, into the beautiful stream of Islam. And this happens now for centuries and centuries. Somebody comes to me and says, oh yeah? Say, yeah, our deen is beautiful, our deen is khalis, our deen is beautiful. Where? All I see is bloodshed. All I see is corruption. All I see is fitna. All I see is lying. I go to the east, there are Islamic countries, there's no deen there. I got ripped off by a taxi guy. Someone gave me sour tomatoes. Somebody lied to me. Somebody kicked me. Somebody did this to me. And these are Muslims? Like, no, no, no. If you want to identify the beauty of Islam, don't look here anymore. Climb up the mountain and go to the original source and understand it from there. That original source are who? The Ahlul Bayt and the Quran and the Aql. Sallu ala Muhammad wa ala. I ask my youth, embrace this challenge. Embrace the path less traveled. Stop selling your souls out for 5 minutes of pleasure in this dunya. It's not worth it. You're far too great for that. The entire purpose of this ushra is the fact that what? To make you identify, forget the person beside you. Your Khalik sees you as better than that. Your Creator sees you as better than that. He had your back and defended you when no one was there. إِنَّ الَّذِينَ يُدَافِعُ عَنِ الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا. Allah defends the ones who have iman. If Allah has the back of anybody, He has the back of the mu'mineen. Imagine walking into any gathering. If on anybody, you have God on your beside you. You're like, yeah, what? What? I got God behind me. And we sell that out for what? Extra job? Pub night? A girl? A few drugs? Doesn't make sense. You're selling yourself short. When everybody around you, from your parents, to your imam, to the alim, to God, thinks higher of you. And the one person that thinks the lowest of you is yourself. Because the decisions that are made is that we ignore the path less traveled, and we take the easy route, man. Shaitan says, come, you say, go, okay, I'm here. Right, that mic example we gave, what, 5 nights ago. Keep that in the back of your head, inshallah. Because if you look at the amount of sacrifice, and the difficulty and hardships, that have come about for this deen to be preserved, it's not fair that we throw that deen away for a few minutes, a few days of this dunya. When you have somebody like Abul Fazl Abbas, the most beautiful way and the beautiful laqab he has is Qamar Bani Hashim. The darkest of the skies. You can't see anything. From a distance you see what? The moon shining. And your eyes go straight to that moon. This man was incredible. What he did, how he did it, was absolutely, even during his masaib, there's fadal in his masibat. You know enough that he was the commander in Satan's army. He was the head. And we know enough to know that from the very first few days, he was attached to Imam Hussein. Imam Ali realized that there was a need for Abul Fazl Abbas on the day of Ashura. Years before the day of Ashura actually ever happened. Everything and anything need to be done, Imam Hussein would ask Abul Fazl Abbas. They arrived in Karbala, Abbas pitched the tents up. Anybody would come from that side, Abbas, go see what they want. And he knew Imam Hussein, the one person, even before him, that he would listen to, would be Zainab. And the one thing about Abul Fazl Abbas is that he would hear the masaib of Sayyidah Fatima Zahra salamullah alayha, and he would cry and cry and cry. And one waqia that I heard that broke my heart, and this explains why he was so close to Zainab, was when he heard the musibat in Medina of what happened to Sayyidah Fatima and the door. They say that for a while, Abbas went missing. No one had any idea where he went. And when Amir al-Mu'mineen was asking that, where is Abbas, where is Abbas, where is Abbas? Finally, somebody says, Mawla, he went towards the grave of Fatima. And when Amir al-Mu'mineen approaches Abbas, he's sitting on the ground, he's crying. And he's saying, how could they do this to you, Ammah? How could they do such dhulm against you, Ammah? If I was present, I would not have let them do this to you. And bayan after bayan, and tears after tears, it's almost as if now he's convinced himself, I wasn't there to protect Fatima, but I'm here to protect Zainab. Whatever Shahzadi would say Zainab, he would say sure. If Imam Hussein would have to get anything done with Abbas that he knew was difficult, he would summon Zainab. Zainab, go talk to Abbas. When the sounds of Al-Atash, Al-Atash became louder and louder day by day going into the day of Ashura, and Abul Fazl Abbas now was being bothered by these sounds, they say one day he's outside his khaymah, and he's sharpening his sword. Sharpening his sword. And the sharper the sword got, the more jalal you can see on his face. He was on a mission. Almost as if he's convinced himself that I'm going to quench their thirst now. I'm going to end this misery right now. And the one that saw this for the first time was a 4-year-old Sakina. Sakina comes, she was very close to Abbas. She sees that Abul Fazl Abbas is sharpening his sword. His face is changing. A 34-year-old giant soldier of a man. He was intense. And Bibi Sakina got scared. And went to Imam Hussein. And says, Baba, there's something happening with Chacha Abbas. Imam Hussein knew the jalal of Haydar is over his face. But he didn't go himself. Hussein says, Zainab, go to Abbas, explain to him why we're here, and stop him from his jalal. They say, Bibi Zainab, enter the area where Abbas was, and says, Abbas. And there was no answer. He was busy, he couldn't hear her possibly. The book see a couple of times, she would say, Abbas, and then he would look up and say, see Zainab. He would instantly rise and say, Shahzadi, why did you come? I would have come to you. And she says, Abbas, if I ask you for something, will you do it for me? He says, I'll do whatever you want, Shahzadi. She says, please, put your sword away. We're not here for that. Hazrat Abbas put his sword away, went to Imam Hussein, and said, Mawla Aqa, if you won't give me ijazah for war, are you hearing these children? Do you hear Al-Atash like I do? Let me go to Farad and get some water. Imam Hussein says, Abbas, you are my alamdar. You are my commander-in-chief. This is your army. This is your army. Once, twice, over and over again. Until after one mayat and one lash after one lash. One body after one body. Until Abul Fazl Abbas has the himmat and the strength to say, Mawla Aqa, you talk about an army? There's no army left for me to be alamdar of. Imam Hussein says that fine, go and get water for the children. Abul Fazl Abbas takes the alam in one hand, takes the musk of Sakina in another, rides upon the horse, mounts the horse, and begins to enter the Maidan of Karbala. Bibi Sakina is watching this. This is Chacha Abbas. She has complete umid. He'll come back. She begins to prepare the kids that water is coming. Water is coming. Water is coming. My Chacha is gone. My Chacha is gone. Abul Fazl Abbas enters the Maidan of Karbala. The only man to reached the banks of Furat was Abbas. Thousands upon thousands were there to intercept him. He began his war line by line. He would cut line by line. They would drop 80 men he killed by himself until they realized that one by one, he'll destroy us. They part. He gets to the banks of Furat. Abul Fazl Abbas gets down off his horse. He begins to fill the musk of Sakina. And then this very famous image of my Fazl Abbas having this water inside of his hands. And for a moment, he looks to the water. And the books say at that moment now, he drops the water inside Furat. I would say this, I haven't read this. If he drank that water, nobody would blame him. He's as thirsty as Imam Hussein is. He's as thirsty as Sakina is. But I, Abbas, your wafadari, your loyalty, he drops the water in one ear for sure. The scribe and the cry of Al-Attash can be heard. In the other, the vision of Imam Hussein's cracked lips. He fills the mask. He returns back towards the Khaymah. His sole purpose is get the water back to the Khaymah. Get the water back to the Khaymah. Now they surround Abul Fazl. They begin to shoot arrows at him. He begins to block the arrows. He begins to kill the individuals. Then the ambush begins. One Mal'un comes out of the ambush and Razwan amputates his right arm. Abul Fazl takes the mushk in his left. Takes the arrow in his left. He's riding towards the Khaymagah, another Mal'un comes and chops off his left hand. Now in the mouth of Abul Fazl, hey Abul Fazl, your sole purpose was to get water to Sakina. Now this man with no arms, a mushk in his mouth, is riding towards the Khaymah. Just get to the Khaymah! Just get to the Khaymah! Then this rain of arrows comes. One hits Abul Fazl in the eye. One hits Abul Fazl in the side. But the one arrow that broke him was the arrow that didn't touch him. It pierced the mushk of Sakina. Abul Fazl stops the horse, turns it around. I'm not going back to the Khaymah without a drop of water. He begins to fight and fight the best he can. At that moment, somebody, a third Mal'un, comes out and launches a strike on Abul Fazl through his crown, through his skull, into his cranium. He falls from the horse. As-salamu alayka ya Aba Abdullah. Alama Majlisi narrates that I read the Masayib of Abul Fazl al-Abbas one night, and in that night Shahzadi al-Qanain comes inside my dream and said, Hey Majlisi, you read the Masayib of Abbas and not the Musiba. Shahzadi, I read what I knew. Tell me what the musibat is. Hey Majlisi, tell those who listen to the Masayib of my Abbas that when somebody falls from a horse, when somebody falls from a horse, they use their arms to break their fall. My Abbas didn't have arms. He fell on the arrow inside of his eye. He falls from the horse. Imam Hussein goes running. In the lap of Imam Hussein is Abul Fazl Abbas. Hey Aqa, I'm sorry I let you down. Hey Mala, are you upset with me? Hey Mala, you asked for water. Hey Mala, you are right now with me, but who will be with you in Asri Ashur? Imam Hussein says, Abbas, do you have any desires? What do you want from me? He says, Aqa Mawla, I have two desires. One desire is that I wish to see you one last time. But there's an arrow in my eye and dirt in the other. I don't have arms to clean my eyes, Mawla. Imam Hussein takes the arrow out of one and takes dirt out of another. Do you have a second request? Yes, Mawla, I have a second request. Don't take my body back to the Khaymah. Leave my body right here. Imam Hussein left Abul Fazl on the banks of Furat, grabbed the alam, went back to the Khaymah. Sakina comes out of the Khaymah. She sees the alam. She doesn't see the alamdar. Hey, Chacha Abbas, your Sakina is not thirsty anymore. Matam Hussein, ya Hussein.